Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us online at Bush Lake in West Tonka and those that are gathered here today. I kind of wondered if we might have the highest attendance of the year or the lowest. I'm glad to see that you've come today. We're in this beauty series. Man, isn't it good just to focus on beauty? There's just so many problems in the world. There's so much agitation. You just feel it everywhere you go. And to have just a period of 5 weeks, we're just elevating the beauty of God. And what a joy. I've loved this series, and I hope you have too. We've looked at the beauty of nature, the beauty of friendship, and why is there pleasure in these beautiful gifts? And today we're looking at the beauty of sexual intimacy. And we know that one of God's purposes in giving us the sexual experience is to procreate. He says in Genesis, be fruitful and multiply. Kind of this rhythmic pattern that comes from the scriptures, get married, have sex, make babies. That's kind of the rhythm that was intended there. But why does he complement it with pleasure? We could procreate without pleasure. Why did God put pleasure into the combination there? Well, the baseline reason is really quite obvious, because if you didn't have pleasure, if sex wasn't fun, you probably wouldn't enter into it. And therefore, your motivations would be diminished, and we wouldn't be fruitful and multiply and fulfill the vision that God has for us. But that would be the baseline. No, we're dealing with the heart of God, who created a world that would delight the people whom he created, and pleasure is included in it. The very origin of pleasure comes from God. The very evidence of his graces to us come from the Lord. And yet, historically, the church has kind of a record on this subject. It's a sensitive one. It's not an easy one. I know that because many of you reached out to me in the last couple of weeks to share your thoughts and opinions and convictions, and I say thank you. I can't cover all of the things that are part of this message series, but boy, is it good to hear from you and to hear what you're thinking about in the journey. But here we come into this place where we know the church has historically looked on this subject and mostly put the shining light. We've elevated the abuse, the dysfunction, the ugliness. And I fear sometimes that the church has done more harm, that we've elevated so much everything that's wrong with these things that we forget to see the beauty of what God originally intended for us in the expression of sexual intimacy. And yet, I get it. It's merited in terms of why we have so much dysfunction. I mean, after all, what God made, we look into the Garden of Eden, was beautiful. But what he made, we marred with sin. And that's where the abuse and ugliness comes in. So it gets easy to just elevate everything that's wrong, but then we miss the beauty. And God, through Christ, is remaking for us the beauty so that we can step in, experience, know, and that we can echo back the very glory of God in these beautiful expressions he's given to us, including sexual expression. So my aim today, quite honestly, is to see beauty, is to thank God for pleasure. It is to foster some conversation. And can I just say, I know this is a sensitive subject, but I'm praying that God will just speak to you in such a powerful way that it will foster conversations that will be meaningful and helpful and move you forward into these given arenas that we're addressing over these courses, the course of these 5 weeks together. So today we're going to look at a chapter in the Song of Songs, a poem, chapter 4 specifically in a few moments. I'll explain that. But first, I thought maybe I could level set the ground, because I heard from so many of you. Let me just at least address some of these things as we make our way toward the beauty expression. So, three observations that I want to make with you. First of all, good lovemaking is about God. That the goal that God had in mind for us was not ultimately for your own pleasure with another person, but rather the pleasure of God, who is the giver of every good gift. That the God equation is part of this expression. I hope you've not separated it, because he's the one who gives it. It belongs to him. And that's part of what he gives to us. So you could be with the best lover imaginable in your life, but if you are not satisfied in your heart with God, if you are not satisfied in your heart with God, you will never be fully satisfied. You will never be fully, there will always be an emptiness. Even if the best scenario is your scenario, there's a reality that these things come from God. In fact, we are told by the psalmist that in thy right hand, in God's right hand, is the fullness of joy. So you can live your life without any sexual experience at all, and have the fullness of joy that satisfies the heart because it's satisfied in Jesus Christ, not through sexual expression along the way. That pleasure experience was given to us by God. And I love that reminder, and it's a good one because you find that the Apostle Paul, you find John the Baptist, you find that Anna in the scriptures were people who never got married, didn't experience the sexual side of what this earth offers, but they experienced the fullness of joy and ended up being a great testimony to us of pleasure as God intends to give it in his mighty right hand. And then there's another expression, and that good lovemaking is not always filled with flames of passion. Surprise, surprise. That it was never intended to be. And in fact, we find that our culture often portrays pleasure as a flash in the pan kind of passion that moves from one lover to another lover, from one fantasy to another fantasy. But does that fulfill the longing that God has for us? Or does it just deepen our disappointment? I can tell you through experience, there's a ton of disappointment in this arena, that God made our hearts for something greater and better in the fullness of pleasure that he intends for us. There's a third observation I would like to make, that good lovemaking is a soul-knitting intimacy that strengthens over time. Now this one, you might want to read again. You might want to take it in and just suspend. Let me explain what I mean. That life changes, that we go through different seasons in our lives, and so does sexual intimacy with it. In fact, we find that sex is not always enjoyable, and it's not always easy. It's kind of like relationships. Even the closest people in your life are not always easy or enjoyable, and I'm not wanting to see any of this happening today, but you get what I mean. It's just part of it, but I want to make a few comments about this because of the journey of our rhythms in our different seasons. Couples will make love on their honeymoon and after miscarriages. That couples will make love to conceive babies and to bury them. That couples will make love in times of good health, robust health, in times when our bodies are filled with disease. Because God ordained this beautiful expression of lovemaking to be part of life's journey. That when life is better or worse, when it's richer or poor, when it's in sickness and in health, until death do us part, we're reflecting the enduring love of God through the different seasons of life. So there's this give and take, these highs and lows in which the beauty of God manifests its presence and its provision through it all, the thick and the thin of it all. And I'm so grateful that it is, because good lovemaking is a soul-knitting intimacy that strengthens over time because of the good graces of God in your life. And so God's vision for marriage in the scriptures tends to have these two expressions of covenant and consummation. That covenant is that time when you come and express your vows and say, yeah, I'm going to be with you. You can count on me. I'm committed to you. I'm bonded to you and to God. That's what's the intent of covenant. We can do this journey of life together. And consummation, that we will make love through all of those seasons, the highs and the lows together. Well, the Song of Solomon really gives us a beautiful picture. It's a poem. It's the love story of these two people from beginning to end. If you've never read it, you'll find it right next to Ecclesiastes. And it is so beautiful. It's a very long poem. It's a very graphic poem. And it's what we're going to step into as we just anchor in this beautiful gift of pleasure that originates with God and is evidence to the existence of God when you include him in the storyline. So we find this couple, actually, vows are already spoken. They're in the bedroom. And we're about to jump into eight expressions that I think give evidence to the good graces of God and why there is pleasure. So I'm just going to say, you've been awfully quiet for the first 7 minutes of my message. So, and I know these are tender things, but I think if you just suspend all of your history, step into the Garden of Eden, expressed even after sin had entered the world, and see the beauty of what God intended. So this message is one you're going to join me in a safe kind of way. You good with this? You're still really quiet, friends. Am I making you nervous? Let's jump into this. All right, here's the very first expression. Good lovemaking is patient. In fact, the first four verses just communicate this. We're going to just patiently walk through each of them. And it elevates the voice of the man to begin with. The woman will step in a little bit later into the poem, but let's launch into Song of Songs chapter 4. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. And so already you have this picture of this picture of pleasure that's taking place. They're in the bedroom, and he uses words patiently to compliment her, to attend to her, to demonstrate this passion and presence with her. And I love when I have the opportunity, this is a text I've studied before, but it was fun to study it again. I'm always finding new things in the Word of God. And just to see, when I go back to the context and how different it is from today, it was interesting for me to learn that in the ancient context, when this poem was written, what was common, what was the norm, is that the covenant would be established, the vows would be spoken, and then they'd be in the celebration, the wedding party. You've been to them. They're a lot of fun. There's dancing and singing and all kinds of great things happening. But the couple, the bride and the groom, would slip away to the bridal chamber, and they would consummate the marriage while the party was going on, and everybody is still in the room. We feel a little self-conscious about that because you know what they're thinking on the outside when you're on the inside, and they're just waiting for the couple to come out. When they come out, they just go, yeah! Yes, way to go. There's a celebration. And my point is, there's no shame. There's no embarrassment in it. It's free because that's what God intended it to be. And maybe we need to recalibrate how we do weddings after the covenant when vows are spoken and we just throw rice at people and say, see you later. Maybe we just need to have the bridal chamber off to the side and make the party more interesting. So I like ancient practices in some ways. It makes sense to me. But I just say, you can see the beauty of covenant and the joy of pleasure, but he doesn't stop there. He continues. Take a look at what he says. He says, continuing, your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from the hills of Gilead. I mean, you get a picture of what's taking place here, I hope, that the veil, you know, the veil is thinly covering her. He can still see her eyes, and it arouses him. It creates a mystery. You can see what he's doing. He's lifting the veil. He's untying her hair. It flows down, as it says here, descending from the hills of Gilead. I've been to Gilead. It's modern-day Jordan. The hills are absolutely gorgeous. And the hills of Gilead are a symbol of God's provision and God's blessing. And he's seeing in this intimate expression as he continues to make his way down her body, as we'll see in a moment, the blessing of God that is unfolding right before them. And it's a beautiful gift, but he doesn't stop there. He continues with the expression. He says, your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, coming up for washing. So each has its twin. Not one of them is alone. It's just saying, your teeth are, I mean, this doesn't sound very romantic talking about teeth to me. It doesn't. But he's saying, you're fresh. You know, fresh breath is better than bad breath. It's just saying, you're clean, you've readied yourself, and you're beautiful in every way, and each has its twin. Not one of them is missing. You've got all your teeth. Way to go. Not everybody did then. Not everybody did. So just taking in the beauty of her journey. And I love this because I'm reading this. Funny things that happen in your head when you're studying, because when I first met Carrie's mother, I was really nervous about it. I come from a very free-flowing kind of camp family. She comes from a very conservative family. I was intimidated, to say the least. And I met her. She was gracious and kind. But Carrie told me later, the very first thing she said is, she really liked your teeth. Not exactly the impression I was trying to make, but I guess teeth have always been a thing then and even now today. But he's making his way down, and he's not done. It continues. Look what he says. Your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. You can almost see him trace his finger around her lips with just patience. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. That's talking about the cheeks. They're just flush and beautiful and compelling. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with the courses of stone, and on it hang 1,000 shields, all of them shields of warriors. This woman has a strong presence. She's making a statement just in how she looks, stepping into that given place. You can see that he's gone from her eyes to her hair, from her teeth to her lips, from her cheekbones to her neck. You can tell he's making his way down. He's just taking in her beauty and saying, man, how wonderful you are, as he expresses it there. And I think sexual intimacy is patient. He's not even physical yet. He's just taking in the prelude to the lovemaking experience that is before them. And I think about sexual intimacy is best when it is full of love. Carrie had for many years in our relationship called it romantical. And she always used that when it was coming from a place that was full of heart, full of passion, of attentiveness, of love, of passion. And it has this patient expression, and it matters. I also think that we should be real in terms of understanding that we're wired up differently in terms of our sex drives. I've always appreciated the writing of Gary Smalley, and encourage you to read some of his writing on relationships, quite good. But he talks about men are like microwaves and women are like crock pots. That men can get hot fast and women can take a long time. And the idea there is to be patient. But can I level set the playing field? I think the inverse is true. Sometimes women can get hot fast, and men aren't interested, and they need the time too, which I think is important to say. When it comes to patience, when it comes to a heart that's full of love and attentiveness and passion, I think men appreciate it as much as women. We've kind of characterized these things so much and we joke about them, but I think there's a much more loving playing field in these expressions than not. That's the first, that good lovemaking is patient. Secondly, good lovemaking is gentle. And it kind of complements the patient's side of it. In fact, he continues to make his way down the body. And look what he says. Your breasts are like two fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. This is in the Bible. And so I'm not saying anything that's new or different or off discussion for us, but you can see what's happening. The veil is off. He's taking her hair down. He's undressed her, and he's taking in her beauty. He's looking at her breasts. And I thought, wow, what a opportune time. So I brought a photo. Now you really got nervous. Here it is. Here's the photo. Oh, there you go. Two twins. Oh, just so beautiful. You know, here's the point. How do you approach two twins, twin fawns of a gazelle, all right? You don't rush in like a lion and pounce, is what he's saying. Because you'll scare them away, guys. Knock it off, okay? He's talking about enjoying the beauty of who she is and approaching her with gentleness. You know, it's something when we raised our kids, I would say both to our boys, and we had two boys and two girls, and just said, you know, when you go through your life, you're going to have many options of people. But whether male or female, I just said, as you find your companion in life, find somebody who's gentle. Find a gentleman or gentlewoman. It really matters. Gentleness is simply kind behavior. It is tender affection. It's a gracious disposition that you have that just opens up a whole world of safety and welcome in that bond of love with each other, as well as what God intended for us in it. And so I think we have a good thing to reflect on here, that sexual intimacy is gentle. So go slow. Go slow. Take in the beauty of what God intends. And sexual intimacy has guardrails. I have this little axiom that assumption is the lowest form of knowledge. And sometimes we live our lives with all these assumptions, never putting words to our feelings of what we truly want. But if God has given this kind of freedom to explore, certainly he's given us the freedom to discuss. And where these shame things come in, well, we won't want to talk about what we really want is of humanity. It is not of God. Have the freedom to define guardrails. I think one of the reasons we've ended up with so much dysfunction and so much abuse in relationships is we've not been able to, with clarity, communicate the guardrails. But once done, if you violate the guardrails, the other person can say, please stop. And then you know when to stop, then just instead of assuming that we're going to stop along the way, it takes that kind of clarity. We find this beautiful expression in the journey. And then we continue. The third one. His good love making is amorous. I just had to throw that word in, this word that we use today. I love this word. It's an adjective. It has to do with the feelings we have of sexual attraction. So you could say the man had an amorous glance toward her, meaning there was a flirtation around it. There was an arousal. There was something that was drawing me to the other person. And you find that in the text, but I'm going to tell you it's far more than it is a glance. This is why I say this is PG-13. Sometimes it's R-rated, but it's so beautifully and tastefully done. PG-13 covers it for us. This is what he says. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee. In other words, all night long, until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. The mountain of myrrh, the hill of incense, is simply the twin fawns of the gazelle. We're coming back to that. Is what's happening here. And it's like all night long he's saying, I have enjoyed you, discovered you in this journey together. Mutually they have done it until the sun rises along the way. It's just this beautiful picture of all night long. So I just know I need to parenthetically pause here because some of you are going, man, no way, all night long. That's never been part of my life and never will be because I love the five-letter word, S-L-E-E-E-P, more than the three-letter word, S-E-X, in the journey. And that may have not been your experience. Don't think that that's the standard. They are in this given place, and they are finding themselves. They are together for the very first time, enjoying and discovering each other's bodies. This was not the norm, the all-night kind of experience. So I do think there's a dose of reality that's worth speaking about here. That you'll have times in your relationship, in the different seasons, where you will feel like it's a dutiful expression, not the end of the world. You'll have other times where it just is so delightful, it almost surprises you, like who are you and where did you come from? And it just takes your breath away. And then there'll be times when sometimes she will say, I'm not in the mood. And it's really wise, guys, just to say, that's okay. Then read a book. Or chew the bedpost until morning if you need to. Whatever you need to do to get through it. But just be gentle and understanding. We have different places at different times in this journey. That's number three. Now, number four, which I know you can't wait for, is good lovemaking is intimidating. And I love this little dose of reality that's put right there in the scripture for us. Look what he says here. You are altogether beautiful, my darling. There is no flaw in you. But if you're the recipient of that statement, you know that you have all kinds of flaws. And you're mindful of them. You're self-conscious about your own flaws. In fact, we find with this beautiful bride that earlier we learned that she's self-conscious herself. She kind of enters into this scene sheepishly, and she's shy, very shy, because she'd been out working in the sun. When she had sun damage, she was self-conscious about how she was looking. And I think that's a case for women, but it's also the case for men, where we get self-conscious when our body is exposed to another person, and it only makes sense that that's the case. But we find here that there's something beautiful that arises, that there's a piece of us that wishes we could be something different than we are. And if we could change something, we would. That was their case. It's our case today, and we just do. We spend the money to do it. In fact, did you know that last year we spent $17.7 billion in the beauty industry? And 45% of it was for plastic surgery. Isn't that amazing? We just change it when we feel self-conscious about our body. We just go ahead and do it. And so I just think there's a point here being made that all of us should take a hold of. When we were just going to the airport recently, there's a sign that's been there, I think since 9/11, and you've seen it. And it says, if you see something, say something. You know that sign? You always go by the airport and say, if you see something, say something. So when you're looking at the body of the person that you're with in this intimate kind of way, and you see something that might be disparaging or a flaw, don't say something. I think that's the point of it, that you could create a hurt that is very, very deep, and you could create something that would cause them to never forget that hurt. So you want to be careful and sensitive around it. In fact, so then how should we see hurt? Because is he overstating it? No, I think he's totally authentic and genuine when he says what he says here. Because from my eyes, I value what I see. And I think we find this in Jesus. See what Jesus sees. I don't have time to unpack the teaching from Ephesians 5, but there's a little bit of a corollary where Jesus says that someday he's going to present his church as holy, blameless, without wrinkle, and pure. Wow. And then he speaks to the relationship between a husband and a wife, that a husband will present his wife as holy, blameless, and pure. Not because of anything you've done, guys. Don't take credit for that. It's for Jesus and how he sees. The value is seen in the eyes of your heart to that given end. And that's the invitation we've been given. And when that happens, and there's that authentic freedom, I just value who you are, it maximizes the experience, which is what we see in the following passage. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride. Come with me from Lebanon. Descend from the crest of Amana, from the top of Sinair, the summit of Hermon, from the lion's dens and the mountain haunts of the leopards. You just find there's this exploration that's taking place. It is the adventure of pleasure that is there, that God wants us to be able to enjoy, and they move into that. The fifth expression that you find that anchors us into the graces of God is that God, good lovemaking is sensuous. And truly, it is. This next set of verses speaks to about the sensory system that God made. God made us with the sensory system and what awakens it. And so we read, you have stolen my heart, my sister, my bride. You have stolen my heart with one glance of your eye, with one jewel of your necklace. It's about the sensory of how we look, what we look at, what we're looking at. And even with how she's adorned herself with jewelry, there's a compelling environment that's being set up. And he continues, how delightful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much more pleasing is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your perfume more than any spice. That the environment, with given a fragrance, even enhances the experience all the more. We're tapped into the sensory system of what God made for us. And then your lips drop sweetness as the honeycomb, my bride. Milk and honey are under your tongue. You know what they're doing there in that kind of kissing. What kind of kissing do we call that today? French kissing. Good. I got one person who had the courage to say anything out loud. It's been this way all day. Just loosen your shoulders, everybody. This is okay. You know what you're thinking. It's French kissing, but you know that France did not exist until the 5th century. This is going to go 1,500 years before, and you will find the place where this poetry is written. So this is an ancient kiss. It's not a French kiss. So next time you're in that kind of mood and you want to kiss that way, you just say, hey, honey, you want an ancient kiss. Sounds cool, doesn't it? Really romantic. You get the feel and the flavor of what's, no pun intended, but of what's intended here in the journey, and you find the sensual nature of this. But it awakens, this is the point, it awakens, that kind of kissing awakens every part of our sensory system. I think about serving as a pastor to student minister when I was over student ministries early in my ministry career. And I, whenever I would speak about relationships, the question would come up by one of the young students, how far can you go? Because I just need to know, how far can I go? And, I just liken that to the story of the dad who took his son to the Grand Canyon. And the son says, how close can I get to the edge of the canyon? And dad goes, not very close at all, because it's a free fall. It's a risk before you even know it. And that's the case here. French kissing awakens the whole sensory system. You're not going to put the brakes on very fast because everything in you says go. It's that powerful, the system that God gives to us in the intimacy of that journey. So you find here this reality of what God is doing, a question around respecting that sensory system. And when we do, we enter into really the presence of God and what he intended, which is the next expression, that good lovemaking is holy. If you've separated it from God, then you have missed the fact that God gave you this gift and you've made it about you. This is the holiness of the Lord that's given to us. In fact, we find in the poem, it says, you are a garden locked up, my sister, my bride. You are a spring enclosed, a sealed fountain. interesting metaphors here because a man's sexuality is spoken of as a spring, and that makes sense. And a woman's sexuality is spoken of as a well, and that makes sense. The spring flows into the well. And so we have here an introduction to a new metaphor, a garden that is locked up, a fountain that is sealed. It's reinforcing that they are virgins, that there is a spiritual hymen between this man and this woman, and he has not touched her until this given evening, which will last all night as he's exploring the beauty of what God has given in this gift. It's just a reminder of the beauty of covenant again and the joy of consummation, the pleasure that comes with that. Now listen, I know that I'm stepping and teaching this ancient text in a modern world. And I know that I'm not speaking to thousands of virgins. And I know that 73% of couples live together before they get married today. 73%. So all of a sudden, I'm wearing a hat that says, Joel, man, you are old school. Times have changed. And they certainly have. And I've watched them through the decades of my life change. And I think there's several reasons for it over the last probably 80 years or go, especially, that the average age for a man getting married today is 28, it's 27 for a woman. And so we have extended adolescence, where often in the ancient times, you were married by the time you're 16 or 17 as you're coming alive sexually. Now we're called to put restraint on this incredible, powerful gift that God has given. How have we done with it? It's very, very difficult. It's not that it can't be done, but it's very, very difficult. Plus, we've become so single-dimensional. I think we kind of justify the choices we make because it's modern times. So that was old times. Certainly, that can't be true for today. And so we get single-dimensional. Say it's just a physical thing. It gets reinforced in all the messaging of our friends and even our movies. There's an old movie called Indecent Proposal that starred Robert Redford and Demi Moore. Demi was married to another guy. They're in a financially difficult place. They don't know how to get out of the mess that they're in. Robert Redford is taken by Demi Moore and says, just give me an evening, just one evening, sleep with me, be with me, and I'll give you $1 million. And you think, wow, this is going to be the gate to freedom. This is from the movie. She says, I'm just going to give him my body, but not my soul. Do you really believe that? That you're just touching a body? No, I will tell you, these are soul-tearing experiences when the relationship doesn't move toward the covenant that was expected. I have been in hundreds of situations. Right now, I have so many goosebumps on me because I get moved to tears when I think about the brokenness I've dealt with people wanting it to be so much more than they ever, you know, thinking I gave myself this way. Well, certainly there's more. Well, not in our culture. It's just physical. It's not. This is a sacred part of our very being and identity. So what do we do with this? I thought, I'm staying on the beauty side, so I want to be clear about that. I don't think God enters into the room right now with the sexual activity of so many people being outside of the covenant of marriage, but I know that that's the reality, so I get that. But I don't think he's coming with shame. I think he's coming with invitation. That when it comes to these choices we make, that we wouldn't be single-threaded about them and think that they're just physical. They're not. They also relate to the sacred dimension of the soul that God has given to us. I think at least to say it's deserving to foster the conversation and let God be included as you navigate that territory. I know it's an old school way of thinking, but maybe it's coming from the school of the wise. It's the wisdom of God in a pattern and a rhythm that he created so long ago, and we've just gotten a little derailed in it. I know it's tender. Let's put it in a place of God is a God of grace and tender affection. He wants the best. Foster the conversation is the least I want to go. I got to wrap this up soon. So, and when you do, by the way, it does create a maximum sexual experience. We continue in the poem, and it says, your plants are an orchard of pomegranates, your choice fruits with henna and nard and saffron, that calamus and cinnamon, with every kind of incense tree, with myrrh and aloes and all the finest spices, you are a garden fountain. I read this again. You are a garden fountain, a well flowing water streaming down from Lebanon. Boy, that line right there is a picture of the woman's anatomy as graphically displayed as you could ever find. And the well is open. It's opening up here for him in the journey. And the bond of affection between them is deepening between each other and God, which takes us to the seventh piece, and that is that good lovemaking is responsive. Now the woman steps in and she speaks. And does she speak verbally and out loud in a way that's really noteworthy? We pick it up, and the story says, this is her. Awake, north wind, and come, south wind. Blow on my garden, that his fragrance may spread abroad. Let my beloved come into his garden and taste its choice fruit. That, my friends, is the most erotic verse in all the scriptures. But it's in the Bible. And it's in the Bible because God intended pleasure to be part of the journey. And so I'm grateful that this is a woman who feels safe and loved, and she can even express it verbally in their intimacy together. And the man's pleasure is important. But I'm going to tell you, it's not about the man's pleasure alone. It's the woman's pleasure too. And sometime in our church history, we've made it about the man and what he needs. But the fact is, God mutually made it satisfying, and the pleasure is for both to experience. And part of that experience is enhanced with verbal responsiveness. So I'm going to say something that probably you've wanted to say to your spouse, but maybe you've felt awkward about saying it. It's okay to be verbally responsive. And you can thank me later for that. But there's a freedom in that because the joy of the Lord actually gets expressed to this passion and this joy that gets heightened by verbal response. And she responds verbally. The last one, we'll wrap it up. Good lovemaking is satisfying. And we find them in this given place. The verbs have changed. And take a look at the repetition of this word. He's back in speaking. I have come into my garden. My sister, my bride, I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. Do you notice the word my appears 8 times? They're mutually satisfied. If you're watching the movies, though I wouldn't use this standard of what is right, they're laying in the bed and smoking a cigarette. That's just not a good way to want to look at it. But they've completed the act of intimacy, and it's a beautiful thing. The word my brings this satisfaction. But the last two lines of this beautiful poem actually turns to chapter 5, verse 1, and I want you to hear the words of God simply saying this: friends, eat friends, and drink. Drink your fill of love. Why is there pleasure? Because it's originated with God. And it gives evidences for God's grace in our lives and the delight that he intends for us to enjoy. And it brings us back to the very beginning. Good lovemaking is about God. That the goal was never ultimately about your experience with another person. It's ultimately about the experience of God's love for you, who is the provider of every good gift, including this gift. So I come to the end of my message. I've tied the ribbon. I have nothing else to say but amen. That's the message. So thanks for being with me in that. Would you just pray with me and let's give thanks to God. Thank you, God, that everything comes from you. Everything belongs to you. What a gift that is. And we easily forget it and make it about us. We all confess that. And I know it's a tender place for some today. So I just ask that your grace that meets us right where we're at would meet them. And I would expect that this would foster some conversation, and might it be good and wise that you would move them forward in understanding your intention and your goodness, that they wouldn't divide, but Father, season their salt with the grace that you have given to us every day. We're grateful for pleasure that you care so much that we would get to delight in the life and the gifts that you've given to us. In Jesus' name, amen.